south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander, my thoughts ever stray.
Hi, everybody. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you what it's really like to live, work, play, and or retire in Latin America. I tell it just like it is, so let's get started. I get a lot of emails from people asking me about buying existing properties down here in Latin America. They've heard what I said about architects designing middle and upper middle class houses and office buildings and stuff. How they're always designed to meet international building specifications and the seismic conditions, as well as the climate for the area. And people who listen to this program now understand that a huge percentage of people who build houses, contractors as well as individuals, don't follow those plans. Now, by all appearances, the house might look exactly like the plans that were approved when they were submitted to the municipality, which is part of the building process down here in Latin America. And that's pretty much the only time you ever meet up with government authorities on a building project at all. When they want your money, but that's the only time they do. For example, when you build a house and your architect hands in the plans to the municipality to get the building permit, which you'll tack to a post on the property, of course. Anyway, when you're down at the municipality getting that permit, the building inspection department will assess a one-time building permit fee. And by the way, there's a building inspection department in every town and county and city. Even though some of them don't even have a car or a truck to come out and inspect anything. That's third world bureaucracy for you. And at first, expats are just appalled by that. A building inspection department without a vehicle to come out and look at things? But in the end, you gotta love it. Sure, you're on your own, you're on the honor system when you build. But talk about minimum government intrusion. Come on now, compared to the absolute big brotherism of the first world, you just gotta love it. Really. And of course, I'm talking again about off the tourist trail here, because if you're in Costa Rica or Panama, they'll send out building inspectors and stuff, and chances are they'll find something wrong that you and your architect never even realized. Like, for example, your wall is too close to the property line. And whether it is or not, it's usually a bribe or a payoff to the local inspector. Nothing tragic, of course. 50, 100, maybe 200 bucks at most. I've been through that 3 times on 2 different properties in Costa Rica, so you heard it here first and you're hearing it from the horse's mouth. And that was more than a dozen years ago, and guess what? I have friends living there still, and they say it's much worse now. But since building inspectors almost never come out and look at the property while it's under construction or even when it's finished, building contractors take all kinds of shortcuts just to save the owner money. And they always think they're doing you a favor because that's just what the average Latin American who's building a house always inevitably asks them to do. Why do you think when you drive through any Latin American neighborhood, rich or poor, you'll always see a few structures that look half built or a building where construction has stopped completely? And it looks like it's been sitting there half complete for a year or so and the property looks abandoned. These are people with such a cash shortage that they actually stopped construction. Now, you don't think that when the owner realized that he was going to run out of money completely, he didn't tell his contractor in a panic to start cutting corners everywhere? Of course he did. It's human nature, right? It's what poor mothers in third world countries do when they run out of money, too. They water down the baby's milk. That's their way of cutting corners. It's the same when governments themselves let out contracts for government buildings, roads, and bridges and infrastructure. Contractors who get those contracts always skim the project by taking massive shortcuts, skimping on concrete, asphalt, metal, the thickness of walls and bases and footings. You name it, they'll cut corners on it. Always, of course, in places that are not obvious. Otherwise, they'd be shooting themselves in the foot. The rule of thumb here is that the project only has to last as long as the politician is in office. In other words, 2 to 4 years before it starts falling apart, depending. Nice work if you can get it, huh? And it's usually a friend, a crony, or a brother-in-law who does get the work. And even if an up-and-up contractor does get the work, eventually they take the low road too. They become forever crooked because they always have to pay at least a 20% skim to the politician or functionary that gave them the contract. So what are they going to do? They're going to cut corners by at least 20% right off the bat. Now, I just ran into an interesting but rather pathetic statistic about building construction down here in Latin America. Did you know that only 5% now of existing buildings constructed by local contractors actually follow the architect's plan to the letter? And I'm not just talking about moving a door or a window or a wall a few inches because of a certain on-site necessity or condition that made it necessary. I'm talking about substantial changes in design. For example, changing the thickness of the entire length of a block wall from 6 inches wide down to 4 inches wide. And in the end, after that building is finished and the walls are painted, no one's going to know the difference at all. Until maybe a nice big earthquake comes rolling along. And you know, there's that steel reinforcement rod called rebar that makes all the difference in the world whether your place is going to remain standing or intact in the unlikely event you have a big one, like a 6.5 or higher on the Richter scale. Well, the fact is, architectural plans call for lots and lots of that stuff. And the more rebar you have cemented inside those block walls, the more resistant your structure is. However, that's one of the most expensive building materials. And guess what? You can't see it at all once the structure's built. It's all buried in the walls. So guess where contractors cut the corners? All right, so now that you know that information, all you have to do is listen to my advice when you build down here. You crack the whip from day one and you tell your builder that he's got to build your building exactly like the blueprint. No deviations and using all the materials as spelled out, no matter what he tries to talk you into in the hopes of trying to save some money. Okay, that's pretty easy to do. If you're building something, you just crack the whip on him, right? Your contractor will soon get the idea, and for him, the pay's the same. But what if you don't want to build? You want to buy an existing structure, especially since there are so many existing structures for sale. And down here, in many cities, it's a mini real estate bubble just waiting to burst. So there are going to be a ton more buildings and houses coming online, and they're going to be really dirt cheap too. A real golden opportunity for expats. So suppose you see something for sale that you like and the price is right. Well, first of all, I'm telling you, 95% of the time, the contractor did cut some corners. Unless it's a big commercial center or high-rise residential building built by a first world foreign corporation, then you know they followed all the international construction codes. That's a given. But that's only the case for those big high-rises and commercial centers. If you're buying a single-family home or a small office building, then there's no doubt they did cut some corners somewhere along the way. And it might not be obvious at all, even if you bring in an architect or another builder to inspect the place before you buy it, being that most serious structural shortcuts are difficult to find. That is, without actually chopping into a wall and checking for rebar and concrete strength. And no owner is ever going to let a prospective buyer hack away at his house. Would you? And here's a good example on how contractors take shortcuts that aren't obvious at all, and you'll never even know it, until a few short years down the line when there's a sudden catastrophic failure. If the place has skylights, which are highly recommended, of course, but they are much more costly than putting in a standard roof where that skylight would be. And by the way, when I say costly, I mean relatively costly, because a skylight down here will cost you a quarter of what it'll cost in the States. However, you can easily cut corners on skylights depending on what quality and thickness of the skylight you buy. And they come in a variety of materials too, like plexiglass and Lexan, and even a kind of fiberglass. And the ones that are very good quality and long-lasting are the heavier gauge ones made out of Lexan. And they come in 3 or 4 thicknesses. And no one can tell the difference by just looking at them. Not when they're fairly new or even a few years old. However, it's all about how long they last. The very thick ones could last 30 years. The very thin ones, 6 or 7 years. And the Lexan ones will stay nice and clear for many, many years. And the plexiglass ones, after 4 or 5 years, they start clouding up permanently. But how are you going to know that? Well, rest assured, most contractors will install the very thinnest ones because he'll be long gone and out of the neighborhood when those things start failing in about 5 to 7 years. And that's why he doesn't install the thicker, much longer-lasting Lexan ones because they're about 3 times as expensive. That's why when you build a structure, those are the ones you want to have installed. And by the way, they rarely do glass skylights here. And for that matter, they rarely do skylights that open like they do up in the States. 98% of them are sealed down to the roof permanently, and they cannot be opened for fresh air. But there's nothing wrong with that, really. And you might wonder why. That's because in Latin America, they make really big skylights, which is good. Much bigger in surface area than you'll see in the States. And if you were to make them that big in glass, they'll be so heavy that they just might crack over the years. And secondly, in the cities of Latin America, many houses have common walls, and therefore common roofs. And glass is an easy target for break-ins, and plexiglass and Lexan, about 10 times as difficult to break. Almost impossible unless you have a lot of time on your hands. Anyway, here's another thing I'm sure you didn't know. Regarding cement blocks, which is the material of choice for construction down in seismic zones. Did you know that cement blocks, like skylights, are not created equal? Not by a long shot. Now, when these things are fabricated at the plant, the strength and resistance of those blocks is directly related to how much cement goes into the mix when they pour it into the mold. So how do you know you're getting an adequate cement mix? Well, the common man on the street has no idea. But contractors know there's more cement in higher-priced blocks. Now, if you can go to one building supply place and buy a standard concrete block for a buck, and you can go to another building supply place across town and get a cement block exactly the same size for 50 cents. Why do you think there's such a disparity? It's all about how much cement went into the mix because that's the expensive part of block fabrication. So I can see the whole thing gets rather complicated. There's 1,001 ways to cut corners, and it's difficult at first to pinpoint exactly where. But I'll give you a couple pointers now on how to determine if when you're looking at a building, were the corners that were cut inconsequential or basically fatal. Just because shortcuts were made, that doesn't mean a building isn't worth buying. Often, minor flaws are easily and cheaply corrected. Well, here's a good rule of thumb. If the house or building's roof has asphalt shingles, like you see up north in the States all the time, if you see that kind of roofing down here, don't even think about buying that building or house. Why? Because though up north, asphalt shingles will last you 15 to 25 years, maybe even more, down here, the sun is much more intense than the sun up north. And secondly, the rainy season's about 5 times as intense too. So, in effect, after about 5 years, an asphalt roof starts fading and cracking and drying out. That's when it starts looking really white trash and trailer court. Okay, so that's tip number one. Tip number two is, when you're walking through that house or building, tap on the walls here and there with your knuckles and see if it's drywall. You can always tell by the hollow sound, because real plaster and block is dead solid. And it can actually hurt when you wrap your knuckles on it. Now, if you start running into some of that interior drywall construction, like they have in the States all over the place, it's common there. But let me warn you, if you run into it down here, you're going to have nothing but problems. It could look good for 2 or 3 years, all right. But you see, that stuff cannot stand the least bit of moisture or water. If it gets wet or moist, it sucks it up like a sponge. Then, slowly but surely, the panels start warping and twisting and bubbling out. It's just a terrible material to use down here in Latin America, but it's cheap. Now remember, it's not like up in the States. Down here, 6 months out of the year, you get this intense rainy season and some long periods of very high, nearly 100% humidity because of it. And in time, over a few years, that just simply ruins your drywall. And that's just from the humidity. Now imagine if it actually comes in contact with physical water. And that happens all the time. It's almost impossible to walk into any house that's a little bit older and not encounter at least some water spotting on the ceiling or even some pretty extensive water damage. Down here, your average Latin just accepts water damage as a way of life. But us expats have much higher standards. If you pop a small leak through the roof, a skylight, or a window, there's almost no way to go up there and fix it permanently till the dry season comes along. So people just let it seep and drip and throw a few buckets down. And typical for Latins, when the dry season comes around and they're able to fix the leak, they usually just forget about it because it's not leaking anymore. And the most they might do is slap some paint over the water damage. Out of sight, out of mind, you know? And that, my friends, is why you never want to build with drywall down here. Even though up in the first world, nearly all houses these days have it. I'm warning you, don't get sucked into that trap. And if you're looking to buy a house and it's got drywall, you know they've really skimped out on the building and are taking some heavy shortcuts, and not just with the drywall. So turn around and walk away if you see drywall. And thirdly, another way to easily spot unacceptable construction techniques in a new or existing home is to have a look at the drain pipe under the sink, the part that's called the P-trap. The curved pipe that leads from the drain in the bottom of your sink into the wall. Now, there's two things you should look for here. In the old days, they were made out of chrome. And these days, they're made out of white PVC, because PVC is much less expensive than that metal chrome and easier to work with. Now, a good way to tell if plumbing's been installed to first world code or close enough to first world code to be acceptable is to grab onto one of those P-traps with one hand and try to move it back and forth a bit. The cheapest and crappiest PVC pipes are so flimsy that, you know, if you rock it or pull on it just a little too much, it'll come right off in your hand. Not to mention, a lot of plumbers who cut corners won't even attach a bathroom sink to the wall properly. So when you pull back and forth on that PVC P-trap, the sink will actually pull away from the wall. A very bad sign. And you should think twice about purchasing a place like that. Because, obviously, what's behind the walls in the plumbing department is even more substandard. Now, the other thing is that the width of those drain pipes under your sink should be 1.5 inches, not 1 inch or 1.25 inches. Those undersized jobs are so cheap and flimsy, they nearly always spring a leak eventually at the joints. And if you find something like that under the sink for all to see, you can bet that the plumbing in the walls and under the cement slab are all undersized and definitely not to code. And no matter how good a deal you think you're getting, in a few years you're going to be sorry, especially if you've got a family and there's more than one or two people in the house using the plumbing. And remember, if the plumbing's undersized, you know they cut corners on the concrete, on the block, on the rebar, anything and everything they could get away with. Now, here's another thing you should take note of if you're a prospective buyer of existing housing. Check out the actual size of the sinks and the toilets, because down here they actually come in a couple of different versions. Normal size, like we're used to up in the States, and what I call child size or three-quarter size. Not a good fit for the average American butt, let me tell you. Now, sometimes they put in one of these pint-sized sinks because the bathroom is just really small. Just one sink like that in an isolated bathroom shouldn't rule out you thinking about buying that house. But if every sink and toilet in the house is kiddie-sized, you got a problem. Because when the folks come down from Cleveland to visit, I guarantee there'll be some wailing and gnashing of teeth when duty calls. Now, you have to remember, those pint-sized toilets and sinks do match the average Latin American physique quite adequately, considering the average Latin American guy is about 5'4" and 140 pounds, until they discover that cheap junk food. Then all bets are off in the keister department. Anyway, do keep an eye out for pint-sized toilet facilities. That should throw up a red flag for you. And now, I would be remiss if I didn't mention just a little bit about bidets. Sometimes when you're looking at upscale houses in Latin America, ones that at first glance seem pretty first world, inside and out. Anyway, every so often you'll find that these upscale houses have jacuzzis and bidets. Actually, they're jacuzzi clones. I've never actually seen a jacuzzi brand name down here. Rest assured, if they got a jacuzzi clone and a bidet, their plumbing and all the water pipes were constructed to first world codes all the way. And by the way, Latin Americans, even wealthy Latin Americans, don't know what a bidet is for. Even though there might be one or two of them in the house. In fact, I've been into some nice older Latin houses that had bidets, and in one of those houses, the bidet was serving as a receptacle for a nice potted palm. And in another house in the same neighborhood, by the way, a wealthy neighborhood, I saw the bidet being used as a stand for the parrot cage. So the question is, why do some wealthy people have bidets, yet they're either never used or used for very odd purposes? Well, that's because wealthy folks who occasionally travel to Spain, a trek back to the homeland, you know? You see, in old world Europe, there are a lot of old stately homes with bidets, and wealthy Latins who are all about the show have to keep up with the Joneses, or the Garcias, so they get their own bidets installed, even though you can bet they really don't know what they're for. But the nice thing is, if you do see one of those things in a home that's been put up for sale, you can bet that house has been built to first world code. Okay, enough about that. Let's move on. Now it's time for a little story. The other day, expat Eddie roped me into going with him to see his doctor in a big medical complex in El Salvador. Now, it really wasn't about him seeing the doctor, not for any medical treatment anyway. You see, Eddie has this idea. In the main lobby of this big medical complex, there's a pharmacy, a tiny little coffee shop, and a small little one-person branch bank. Now, Eddie had this brainstorm. He wants to put a little sushi kiosk in that lobby. Now, there's a ton of traffic in this medical building. It's got about 7 floors and even has an outpatient hospital. And I counted about 50 different specialists who have their offices in that building. So it's got a ton of traffic, and Eddie really does have a good idea. It's all about that first world gringo advantage again. He sees an opportunity where no one else has. Anyway, Eddie says we have to visit this certain doctor. It's that this doctor is an original investor in this medical building, and he's on the board of directors. So Eddie's there to bounce his sushi bar proposal off this guy because he's the one that can make it happen. Though Eddie will probably have to cut this guy in for a percentage because that's the way it works down here. Now, I have to mention, this is a very upscale medical complex. Only a couple years old and first world all the way. It's all private with nice late model cars in the parking lot, just a kind of market that Eddie knows works well for his little sushi bars. After all, only first world wannabes with a little extra spending money even know what sushi is. Like Eddie says, his little sushi bars are not about stuffing yourself to get full. They're more places to see and be seen, rather than chow down. Eddie serves the same market as the gringo wannabes who hang out at Starbucks. And like Eddie says, unless the food's free, no one ever stuffs himself at a sushi bar. He's got a point there, you know? So anyway, we're sitting in the lobby of this doctor's office on the 6th floor. It's mahogany and glass, first world all the way, with a spectacular view. Then suddenly, two very hot-looking airline stewardesses walk in, you know, pulling their little luggage carts behind them, navy blue matching uniforms and all. And they sat down a couple of chairs away from Eddie and I, taking their turns waiting to see the doctor too. Oh, and I forgot to tell you, this is a plastic surgeon's office. And of course, Eddie elbows me and says under his breath in English, $10 says one on the left had a nose job, one on the right, boobs and lipo. And I turned to him and said, good call, Eddie. What else would they be here for? A shave and a haircut? Duh. So anyway, we're sitting there for about 5 or 10 minutes, and I noticed through the glass window out in the hallway by the elevator, there were two more good-looking stewardesses pulling their little suitcases along. And when Eddie saw those two ladies out in the hall, he turned to the two that were sitting with us, and he said to them, in Spanish, of course, is this like Stewardess Tuesday or something? I mean, I count 4 of you on this floor alone. Then one of the ladies just started to laugh. She said, we're not airline stewardesses, we're drug reps. And she opened up her little suitcase and it was loaded with drug samples. And she explained she was working for Sandoz and her friend was working for Burroughs Wellcome, two of the biggest international drug companies in the world. And as we started talking to them, we realized this was one of the best scams we ever heard of, something that never could have taken place up in the first world. Anti-discrimination and equal opportunity laws would just never have allowed it. Turns out these drug companies hire these beautiful female models and turn them into drug reps because they know that doctors will drop everything when a beautiful girl's knocking on the door. Yep, you gotta hand it to those drug companies, all right. They've got the pulse of the macho Latin world, that's for sure. And I did ask those ladies what it was like being a drug rep down here, and I found out they make about $800 to $1,000 a month, which is a lot of money in these parts. And yes, they do have expense accounts to take doctors to lunch and give them little gifts, just like up in the first world. But it's not near the sophisticated bribery and coercion that goes on up in Boston and Cleveland. The doctors don't get free trips to Maui or Jamaica, or get comped for golf weekends at international resorts. Because of the extremely low cost of medical treatment down here, as well as the very low cost of drugs, and the fact that doctors aren't into prescribing a lot of medications, the drug companies do not have a stranglehold on doctors. In fact, they don't have much of a hold on them at all. Sure, they hand out freebie samples of these drugs that these beautiful drug reps push, but the drug rep and doctor relationship is not at all sophisticated like it is up in the first world. Whereas we all know doctors up there actually get kickbacks from drug companies depending on what brands of drugs they push. But due to the usual lag time phenomena, that stuff just hasn't happened down here yet. Not that the big drug companies aren't gearing up for it. They are. But remember, Latin America is the land of dirt cheap generic drugs. So these big monster drug companies like Novartis, Sandoz, and Abbott's Laboratory really have their work cut out for them. But they do have a foolproof plan now, don't they? I mean, what doctor wouldn't make a little extra time in his day when a girl like that knocks on his door? Remember, this is macho Latin America. It's easy to brush off a nerdy guy with his suitcase full of drug samples. These Latin doctors are dedicated professionals, but beneath all that, they're still Latin males. So anyway, did Eddie finally make a deal with the doc to put in his sushi bar? Did he have to cut the doc in for a piece? Well, it turns out that day we never did get that far. Why? Because it was getting around lunchtime, and guess what? Those two beautiful young girls took precedence over the likes of Eddie and me. Go figure. So the doc rescheduled with Eddie and made his apologies. But there was a lesson learned. Next time Eddie says he's bringing his girlfriend, and being that she's a model, a swimsuit model, Eddie believes he'll have that sushi bar project in the bag. Oh, and before we finish off today, I've got some news about taxes in Latin America. According to the Inter-American Economic Administration Commission, they put together a list charting the average tax burden for all 20 Latin American countries. Just like you might have figured, the countries with the very highest tax burdens are Chile, Panama, Costa Rica, and Argentina, with their people having a combined tax of from 32 to 34% of their income. And that includes all taxes combined, income tax, VAT, utility taxes, and gas taxes and the like, which is still below the more than 50% combined taxes the average North American and European pays. But the big surprise is that Brazil also appears as a high-tax Latin country. It comes in at 34% combined taxes for the average Brazilian. Now, the Latin countries that appear at the other end of the spectrum, the very low combined tax countries, those countries are the Dominican Republic, Guatemala, Nicaragua, Honduras, Salvador, Bolivia, Paraguay, and Peru. And these countries have a very low combined tax rate of between 12 and 13% of the average taxpayer's income. Yet another good reason you should be making your plans to come on down. But it is a good idea to avoid Chile, Panama, Costa Rica, Argentina, and now Brazil. Now before I finish here, I'd like to make an announcement or two. Due to a little unforeseen schedule shuffling, I have two, maybe three openings for my Latin American seminar that takes place in mid-January. So if you're interested, go to expatwisdom.com and click on the seminar link. And just a quick update to loyal listeners. If you want to listen to and read more about the expat life, especially how to live the good life off the tourist trail, just touch base with our growing expat community and search for Expat Wisdom on Facebook or Twitter. It would be great to have you guys following along on those sites too. So again, just search for Expat Wisdom on Facebook or Twitter.
South of the border, down Mexico way.
You've been listening to the Expat Files, Living in Latin America, coming to you each week from somewhere south of the border. And don't forget, you can email me on anything at all about Latin America, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. See you next time. Nos vemos.
Ah, she was a picture, you know.